Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, kids.
Good morning, good morning, morning. Let's take a moment to say our prayer of light together. And remember that we are praying this prayer for all beings, no matter how they might look on the outside. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. The presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is. Margo and I were waiting outside for the door to get open a little bit early. And there's every Sunday morning, there's a van down the block that has food for the homeless people around. And I was thinking this morning that it seems like the homeless people who are outside this church are better off than most of the Ukrainians are right now today. Mm. What a horrible thought, almost, and yet true. We're seemingly in the midst of absolute senseless destruction, hatred, fear, separation. And so one of the things that I am stretched with here is to go beyond what my thinking mind sees, to go beyond my own analysis, to go beyond my own prejudices, to go beyond my own being right. And even though I do not understand, to know that I am being challenged to hold onto or open myself up to a deeper truth. That in a way that I don't understand that all of this has a reason or a purpose behind. It can't all be just death and destruction. We're going to be talking about feelings this morning. Not that they're bad or wrong, but they're not. They're part of our lives, certainly part of our human existence, part of what we need to learn from. But they're not always the truth. In other words, I remember a friend of mine one time, she asked me, how you doing? I said, I'm a mess. She said, no, you're not. You feel like a mess. I said, oh, you feel like a mess, but that doesn't mean you are. I feel like crap, but that doesn't mean that I am. And I remember the reading this morning is going to be somewhat reflective of something I remember Ram Dass saying years ago. He said, you know, I spent years and lots of effort working on getting high. He said, I did it with drugs. I did it with psychedelics. I did it with meditation. I did it with service work, you know, pat myself on the back, what a good boy am I. I did it with all sorts of things. He said, the difficulty is that then you spend all of your time trying to stay high or trying to find new ways of getting high. And he said, I finally realized the message is not to get high, but to get free. Now, I didn't completely understand that, but I got a sense of what he was talking about. And maybe this morning, since it's going to key in this morning, not on getting high, but on getting happy, which is pretty much the same thing. Okay. I don't know about you guys. I got high to get happy. I had my own methods and so did you probably. So it's going to be... going to be kind of, and I really appreciate your input on this because I think it's in a very overt way and also in a very subtle way. This is probably one of the most important pieces of spiritual literature and understanding that we can get through. that we are not after just feeling good or feeling happy. That's an emotion, which is, it's certainly okay to be after that. But to recognize that my feelings and my emotions are going to be rather fickle. They're going to change like the weather. I can be up 1 minute and down the next. I don't know about you guys, but I can be. And if I'm always just clinging to that happiness or joy or feeling that, then I'm going to be spending all of my time sort of chasing rainbows and never really enjoying the pot of gold that's kind of sitting in my lap. So I just like to keep that in mind. Again, this is not contradictory of feelings, not throwing them away, but saying, you know, I need to be able to live in a deeper reality that allows me to understand that feelings are good feelings, bad feeling, whatever they are, that they're wonderful teachers. But they're not necessarily the truth of who I am. The way I look at it an awful lot is that I have looked at my feelings as being a definition or an idea of my spiritual condition. So if I feel good, then God must be smiling on me. And if I feel bad, I must have done something wrong. It's kind of the old Santa Claus image in the sky. And I don't know about you guys, but that's still a difficult one for me to shake. But that's kind of what the lesson is for one of part of the lesson anyway this morning is about, just to kind of give you a preemptive strike here to get an idea of where we're going. And, you know, if you have any questions or things you want to explore about that, please do. So does anybody have any leftover stuff from last week or weeks past? Or maybe anything that might have come up in your learning this week? I'm going to begin on page 54. There'll be a little bit of an overlap here. We ended with a prayer or an affirmation. And by the way, I know I've said this before, but the prayers or the affirmations in these books are not about manifesting or creating something. They're about affirming something that's already there. So the word that they use an awful lot instead of manifestation is being in alignment with the truth. So if I say, I love you, you can take that in on an emotional level, which is okay. It's true on an emotional level. You can take it in on a deeper level of understanding that speaking to your soul or your heart, not your physical heart, but your spiritual heart. And you can also look at that as kind of a way of saying, you know, I can say that's true, but in order for me to experience the love that is coming to me, I need to align myself with that. I know that might sound like a little bit of a foreign concept, but it's probably the best we can do. I align myself to the love that's coming to me. And how do I know that that's true? I experience it. It's kind of like opening the shades, opening the windows and letting the sun come in. I can sense its warmth. I know that that's true. It's not just happening up here, and it's not just happening in my heart either. It's happening all the way through. How do I know that I am loved? When I align myself to the truth of it, I am in that experience, if I choose to be. So the first words that it speaks here is, I have a right to be here exactly as I am. And there is nothing else that could possibly be so. Now, I want to stretch you with that one. It's not just as I am, but also my perception. As I am is usually the way we usually translate that is who I think I am at this moment, how I perceive myself in this. Well, this is even beyond that. How you perceive yourself is only how you perceive yourself. It's not the truth. Or let's put it this way. It's a very limited piece of the truth. I have a right to be here exactly as I am, and there is nothing else that could possibly be so. As I am a manifestation of the divine, I may know myself in consort with those creations that would reflect this for my own highest good, for my own learning, and for the good of all. That's a great way to end a prayer, for my highest good and the good of all beings. Because that's what we're after anyway. My highest good and the good of all beings. On top of page 54. And just kind of relax with this. Don't make it too heavy duty, even though it is. As you decide this is so, what you claim is moving you. It's a real interesting part. What I claim as being my truth also sort of pulls me in a little bit deeper and a little bit more. So I claim myself as a manifestation of the divine. And I recognize when I claim it and I align myself with that, that draws me into connecting with that reality even more deeply than I did a moment ago. So it's not something you say, well, I got it now. More like it's got me now. And how much more can I let it get me? How much more can I allow that love that I am expand, grow, evolve, transform? Here's where the happiness thing comes in. And if you need to talk about this, check it out a little bit further, please do. The idea that you engage in a process like this only to be happy. Well, I'm reading this book, so I finally get happy. Or I'll buy another book and finally get happy. I'll go to this workshop and I'll finally get happy. Is a ridiculous concept. Years ago, I would have found that terribly offensive. Right now, I realize it is pretty ridiculous. The idea that you engage in a process like this only to be happy is a ridiculous concept. Only to be happy means you get what you think you want based on a prescription of what you believe happiness to be. That is just the whole thing in a nutshell. Only to be happy means you get what you think you want based on a prescription of what you believe happiness to be. As a wise person once said, there are two ways to be disappointed when you're living in your ego consciousness. One is to not get what you want. That's the obvious one. The more subtle one is to get what you want. Because as soon as you get what you want, you find that it's not doing for you what you thought it was going to do. Or you find it's on sale someplace else, or a new model just came out, right? Or however your mind might work, okay? And so, you know, the attraction or the attachment or the idea in my mind of how this is going to make me feel is probably much stronger than actually getting the thing itself. I think Winnie the Pooh talked about that one time when he was talking to Tigger and Piglet. And he said, you know, there's something even better than eating honey. And that's thinking about eating honey.
Jerry?
Yeah.
This is Paula.
Huh?
And isn't that like the same principle that the Buddhist philosophy is constantly saying, that we are always grasping for something else in the hopes, then I'll be happy if I get this shirt, I'll get this new dress. And I think if all of us, I know for myself, when I really go inward about this, and be aware of the feelings of say you see something and you've decided you're going to buy it, and you feel those, it could be just a small item, and you feel that kind of that excitement in you. I'm going to buy this. A package is going to come in the mail or whatever. And then you get it, and the happiness, and that thing is gone.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling is gone. And that really absorbing that feeling of we are always grasping for something else.
Yeah, and you know what you reminded me of, Paula, is that if you can practice this in your mind, let's suppose you see something on the internet that you didn't even know existed 30 seconds ago, right? But you got to have it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it could just kind of trigger something off in you. Is to kind of push your imagination a little bit further and said, well, what is it going to feel like when I have that? When the package arrives and I open the package up and there it is in my hand, how is that going to make me feel? Actually kind of walk yourself through the process. Now, it might not work all the time, but what's going to happen a lot of times is you're going to imagine yourself getting what it was you wanted, and it's going to be like that moment of ah, oh. And then right after that, it's like, the hell did I want this? What the hell did I want this for?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, we can learn how to practice that in our mind so we don't get caught up too much in what that's going to look like or what's going to happen in the material world.
So when you take it to the bigger scale, like we're seeing out in the world, it's in essence almost the same thing. Putin, whoever, you know, in the world, the whole grasping for this piece of land, this will do it for me. This mm-hmm. will bring me. And all that, like you said, when you started off, this needless destruction for that act of grasping and greed and wanting, never satisfied. What in Buddhism they call it, the hungry ghost, mm-hmm. eating disorders, drinking, drugs. It's that feeding yourself to feel what? Good.
Good.
And I'll feel good. I'll feel good when I feel better when I eat that for a moment. I feel better when I got that, you mm-hmm. know, that pair of jeans, when I have 20 pairs of jeans in my closet.
And that's one of the reasons why Buddha said life is suffering. And all suffering comes from attachment. And he added that the third noble truth is there is a way through. Mm-hmm. And we are examining that ourselves in different ways. One of the ways I know in dealing with an addiction, like alcoholism, for example, one of the original pieces of information that I got very early in my recovery was, you know, if you're thinking about drinking, or you really want to drink, think yourself through it first. So, you know, you think yourself through the first drink, that tasted really good. That was a really, really good jolt. That was great. I think I'll have another one. And you walk yourself through and you find out that in a very, very quickly that you wind up in this godforsaken place that you never wanted to be in the first place. And you say, oh my God. So it's a way of the way one of my a friend of mine, it's a way of having the morning after without having the night before.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I guess what we're hinting at or what we're saying here, and I don't think the book goes into this part too much, but I think it's a very, very important truth, is that you can practice in your mind, in your imagination, what it would be like to get this thing that you want and even experience that little jolt of having it. And then after a very short moment or two, experiencing the uselessness of this thing that I just was pining away for a while ago, that I thought or seemed to carry with it the essence of making me happy or making me glad or giving me peace. Oh, when I get that, I'll be peaceful. Mm-hmm. I won't want anything anymore.
Mm-mm.
I promise. Yeah. Of course, there it is again.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah.
in the 12-step program, I called that chasing a high. Mm-hmm. You know, I was always chasing a high, and I came to realize that as long as I was listening to the critical parent over and over and over in my head, because I'd listened to that all my life, I didn't know how to even, I didn't even know about a loving parent part of you. And so I chased a high for how many years, 40 something years, and it didn't work. It doesn't work, and it is only temporary. And it wasn't until I started to recognize that critical parent and those messages, I didn't need to act out and try to medicate it. I had to realize there was a loving parent, there was a part of me, and I had to realize that I was a good person. I had to learn how to love myself and to stop those old messages. That's how I had to deal with it. So now I don't have to gamble. I don't have to drink. I don't have to do drugs. It's an awareness of a loving parent, and it's a beautiful thing.
Thanks, Diane.
Mm-hmm.
I remember an old TV show. I think it was an adaptation of a screenplay, and Jack Lemmon was one of the major characters. Of course, I think he had already done the movie Days of Wine and Roses, but this was sort of a reflection of that. He played a drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember somebody asked him, he said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm looking for that magic bottle. Yeah. I'm looking for the one that made me feel the way I felt years and years and years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the high we start, that we start chasing that first high that we had that said, everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be wonderful. You're cool. You're the coolest thing God ever created. All right. You know, just take it. And, you know, you never can repeat that one. As Diane said, you're always chasing that high. Right. And you're chasing something that doesn't exist. And until you realize it doesn't exist, you're going to keep chasing it. Or you think it exists. You think it exists over, I'm over here, I'm over there. The true effect of this work is that the life that you live exhibits worth in all ways and recognizes the worth of all regardless of what they present. The true effect of this work is not happiness, not emotional happiness, is that the life that you live right here, right now, this moment, exhibits worth in all ways and recognizes the worth of all, regardless of what they present. No judgment. And as you are able to do this, we're all growing into that one, okay? As you are able to see yourself and see the world that way, as you are able to do this, you lift to the mountainside and may call to you what you require to grow through in your escalation in frequency. So as you raise the level of your own consciousness, you will attract to you those lessons in a more gentle way of what you need to learn. I'm open to what I need to learn in this moment. I do that every time I do a class like this. I am open to what I need to learn. Because it's so powerful because, you know, the Course in Miracles reminds us that you teach what you want to learn. So whatever's up, whatever you're telling yourself, whatever you're telling somebody else is probably something you and I need to learn from ourselves. We will say this about happiness. It's a very nice thing. And we are very happy if you are happy. But many of you believe that happiness is the goal of life. If that were the case, why would it ever rain? If happiness were the goal, why would the sun ever scorch your face? You have been gifted with a landscape that will give you varied experience to learn through. And if happiness were the goal, there would be no need to continue the trek forward. Well, Paul is getting concerned here because he's addicted to happiness just as much as the rest of us are, all right? But what is the point? What is the goal then if it's not happiness? The goal is your own worth manifested as you. Or as the book says so frequently, the divine as you. The divine expresses itself as you. The goal is your own worth manifested as you. The action of the divine operates as and through you to lift in frequency all you encounter. And the things you require to learn this through are called to you by your very own consciousness, because the aspect of you that knows who she is already will not be denied and will call to you everything you need so that she can be in her full manifestation. So everything that shows up for you, for me, for anybody else, is a reflection of my soul's desire to experience itself in its own deepest truth. That's the whole ball of wax. Everything that comes up, everything that appears in your life and my life, is my soul's way of teaching the rest of me who I am in truth. And by the way, that's sort of an infinite learning. I've got the truth of who I am. And that's like saying I've had my fill of unconditional love. I don't need any more. If we can recognize the ridiculousness of a statement like that, we can begin to realize that, you know, we're constantly stretching, evolving, opening ourselves to more. So that when Paul, when Paul asks the question, what's the goal here? And they say, simply put, the goal is your own worth manifested as you. That's not something you get. Oh, I got it now. What's next? This is my take on it right now. It's my understanding of that is continually open and evolving. So there's how much can I take in? How much unconditional love can I take in? Well, right now I am because of my view of myself, it might be rather limited. But unconditional love, by its very essence, means it can continue to fill my being. Today, tomorrow, the next day, and the next day. And what I am praying for, working towards, is that my capacity for that can continue to stretch and grow and be.
Jerry?
Yes.
Okay, so what this reminds me of is the David Hawkins' levels what did he call them? I've forgotten now. But when David Hawkins talks about the various levels that we go through, the scale of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was highly influenced by that, by the idea of the scales of consciousness. And so he talks about, he would laugh when he would lecture, and he would talk about the programs we were trying to install in different countries. And he would talk about how we in the United States of America, we vibrated as a society at a certain level, and in other countries, they vibrated at a different level. And so he'd say, well, they don't even understand what we're trying to express to them because they vibrate at this level. So some individuals in those countries do understand what we're trying to communicate to them, but others don't. And so the language you were just using, I'm trying to absorb as much unconditional love as I can. At this, and I've forgotten the exact words you were using, But we each individually, we try to absorb as much unconditional love as I can at my level. I mean, I was understanding that through that my level, my current level, my frequency, my level of consciousness, my level of, you know, so that's how I was taking that in. I'm also thinking about, and I've got these books in front of me right now, Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift by Robert Schwartz. And Robert talks, and I met Robert here in Louisville at a conference one time. Robert interviewed psychics who were able to go back and talk to interview people as they were just before they were being born, and how they were planning their life just before they were born. And why were they planning the life they were going to lead? Why were they planning the exact circumstances of their lives? And so very interesting books, because they were planning certain events in their life. Now, they couldn't plan every detail of their life, but they were planning for certain things to occur. And I remember one of the stories in Your Soul's Plan, the one that made a very powerful influence on me, was the person who chose to become an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And why did they choose to become an alcoholic? They wanted to understand who they weren't, and so that when they went through AA and got sober, so they could understand who they were. But there are some really powerful stories in there of people who have a life's plan before they are born, so that they can absorb unconditional love in their life as they learn. So anyway, that's just kind of how I'm understanding that. I think you're 100% right. We want to absorb this, but we have conditions in our lives that we go through in order, and also Edgar Cayce, the same thing. We plan our lives ahead of time, and we come back to face certain circumstances that allow us, as we go through those circumstances and go through those circumstances, they create conditions that allow us to absorb even more unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough. Thank you.
Thanks, John. We're gonna do a meditation around that idea towards our closing. So I was gonna get into that right now, but I think I'll save it for the meditation part. Okay.
Yeah.
So thanks for that.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Jim.
Just real quickly, and babe, perhaps you or anyone can chime in and give me some insight. So, absorbing unconditional love. I had written down, I'm open to what I need to learn through this experience that's in front of me. So, I have these new neighbors who just moved in, and where I stay at, primarily, you know, this particular unit had always been vacant. But anyway, these new neighbors that moved in, and I kind of almost feel like the old guy, get off my grass. that they're really young, and there's a lot of activity, it's not negative activity. It's just they're young, and there's music, so the other day when I came back, there's different parking spaces. So there's one parking space specifically for folks who are handicapped, and I was kind of looking around for a handicap decal on this person's car, and I didn't see one. So I know this is something for me to learn, because it's a generational thing. They're very, very young. And I'm willing to look at them beyond what's kind of showing up. So again, not that struggling. This has kind of been my challenge for the last week or so. So, yeah, I'm just trying to understand.
That can be a big one, okay? What did I create this one for? Huh? Makes no sense. It's, you know what you reminded me of, Jim, and I don't mean to downplay your feelings because I know what it's like to live next door to a noisy or obnoxious neighbor. But it's almost like if you see a wet paint sign, do you have to go and touch the paint, see if it's really wet? Because when we get caught up in what you're getting caught up in, sometimes we'll go out of our way to get caught up in even more. So I'm just encouraging you, hold that in the light.
Okay.
And hold yourself there as well.
Thank you.
And a psychic once told me about moving away from people in your life who are rather obnoxious. And she said, you know, don't try and imagine them disappearing. But imagine that you see their back moving away from you. Mm. And you can do that emotionally as well as physically, okay?
Okay.
I become less and less attached to what I think should be. And, you know, let go of what I need to let go of here.
Thank you. Thank you, man.
Let's see, we got a little bit more reading to do before we get into our meditation this morning. Let me, this kind of ties in with what's already been said. And the things that you require to learn this through are called to you by your very own consciousness, because the aspect of you that knows who she is already will not be denied and will call to you everything you need so that she can be in her full manifestation. Now we speak to you in high regard. We are not talking to you as children, nor are we telling you you should not be happy. What we are asking you to do is to decide that the life that you live in its current manifestation has been a requirement for your growth so that you can go forward. And in some ways has been your choice. And we have said that everything you see before you in any way is a manifestation of consciousness. And consequently, what we mean is that your consciousness, the vehicle you operate as and through, has a calling for you, and she will be heard. He will be heard. And you will know what it means to sing your own song, to be expressed in the fullness as the Christ itself that you are in truth. One more paragraph here. The demand of this on your own being is to acquiesce to the divine that exists as you and align to its requirements for your evolution. The evolution you have thus far, as we said, was required by you to get you in this moment. In other words, everything that has ever happened in your life right now has brought you to this particular moment and what you're going to do with this particular moment. The evolution you have thus far, as we said, was required by you to get in this moment to encounter the self that has imprinted her consciousness on all she sees before her and decided what things mean. Teacher of mine likes to say, you are the meaning maker of your life. So even though you have chosen all of these lessons to learn from, you are the one who decides what everything in your life means. And you also decide whether it's meaningless or not. What does that spilled cup of coffee mean? What does that bad haircut mean? What does that noisy neighbor mean? Okay.
Hey, yeah. Hey, Jerry. Yeah. it just reminds me of when I was growing up, the alcoholic in the family and eight kids in a small house. Shh, you had to be quiet. Shh. If you made noise, there was trouble involved in it. So today, if I hear somebody making a lot of noise, that triggers that message in my mind.
Yeah.
I think I got to go over there and fix that so I can keep them safe. Shh, you got to be quiet. But today, working with this loving parent, you know, I just have to take care of me. Just keep myself safe.
Thank you. You know, what triggers me is angry people. If I hear somebody being angry at somebody else, even if I don't know them, they might be down the block, somebody yelling at somebody else. I can, in my gut, I freeze.
Yep.
I literally freeze.
Mm-hmm. That's me too, Jerry.
I haven't quite completely healed that one yet. Mm-hmm. Right? Still there. So one of the things that I've learned how to do is to put my hand over my heart and remind myself, you are perfectly safe. You are perfect. Because most of 99.9, maybe even 100% of the time, the anger has nothing to do with me. It's somebody else being angry at somebody else. But even hearing that raised voice, bam, freezes me. You are perfectly safe. You're perfectly safe. You're perfectly safe. And I invented that angry argument down at the end of my block to remind me that I am perfectly safe. How's that fit?
That's good.
That's for me.
Stay in your own garden.
We're with you, Jim.
Yep.
Yes, we are. We're praying for light, not only for your apartment, but the people next to you. Okay, I'm going to ask you all to put your stuff down for a moment. This will be a little bit more of a guided imagery than it is a meditation, although it's sometimes hard to tell the difference between the two. So allow yourself to get comfortable in the space you're in. Tune with your breathing. Might just want to take a couple of deep breaths, just kind of stretch that part of you out, kind of let go of some of your body armor, soften a little bit. And as you do that, allow your whole body to relax. Relax into your breathing. And know that you are not alone. The Spirit of God is with you. The light of God surrounds you. The love of God enfolds you. The power of God protects you. And the presence of God watches over you. And breathe into that truth. And to allow you to go even a little bit deeper, get in touch with your physical body. Notice if there's anything going on. You don't have to define it. You might feel like my neck is a little bit tight or my stomach's growling or this. No matter what's going on, just notice what's going on with your body. You don't have to affirm or deny it or fight or struggle with it. Just notice there's stuff going on with my body. And to recognize that you have a body, but you are not your body. You are more than that. So you let go of the stuff of your physical existence for a moment, your body. Recognize that you are more than that. And then you take a moment to notice what's going on with your emotional self. Whatever's rocking around inside there. Some feelings you recognize, some you don't. No need to define or struggle with them. But as you do that, recognize that you have feelings, you have emotions, but you are not your feelings, you are not your emotions, you're more than that. And then allow yourself to move your awareness to your thinking mind. Separate yourself a little bit from it. You'll notice that your mind is constantly producing thoughts. It never rests. Constantly produces thoughts. Some seem important, some don't. Some you will forget in a moment, some will stay. You can remind yourself that I have a mind, but I am not my mind. I am more than that. I have a body, but I am more than my body. I have feelings, I have emotions, and I am more than my feelings, more than my emotions. I have a mind and I have thoughts. And I am more than my mind, more than my thoughts. And allow this more of you, this essence of your being, to rise more and more to the surface of your consciousness. You don't have to do anything with it. You don't have to think about it. Just let it be. You can experience yourself beyond many of your self-imposed boundaries. And imagine what it would be like in this immaterial world. If you could imagine yourself, which is much more than yourself right now in this lifetime. But imagine yourself in this non-physical state, this non-physical realm, before you incarnate, before you become, at least in part, a physical being. And you are surrounded by guides and angels, teachers, and you're all making preparation for this new lifetime you are going to enter. And through your own past experience, through what the guides and teachers are moving you with, you sort of say to yourself, okay, in this next incarnation, in this next lifetime, here are the lessons I'm going to decide to learn. So loving myself unconditionally might be the top of my list, one of which I have visited many times before. Patience might be another one. Tolerance of others might be one. Reinforcing my own strength, recognizing myself as a true divine being, being gentle with myself, being gentle with others, And so as you stay in this non-physical space with all of these other beings helping you, guiding you, you create an agenda, a blueprint for this next time around. You don't necessarily plan all the specifics, but the lessons are quite dominant in your mind. How they show up, when they show up, might be a matter of circumstance of life on planet Earth. You are not predestined. You are deciding what you are coming here to learn. So take a moment just to get a sense of that manifestation of your agenda, your list for this time around. Might even have to do with some relationships in your life. And the time is coming closer and closer when you will incarnate in this new body and begin your life on planet Earth, this new life. So imagine, if you will, that you move from this non-physical place and you sort of grab a hold of this agenda that you've created for yourself. And you allow yourself to incarnate in your mother's womb. And yes, you fall into forgetfulness. But then you wind up creating experiences such as this on Sunday morning to remind you not only of the truth of who you are, but what you have come here to learn and stretch and grow and evolve. Today is your birth. Breathing in, breathing out. And I would encourage you to surround all of this understanding, all of this work, with an aura of gentleness. Whatever that means for you. And then to take another deep cleansing breath, stretch a bit and open your eyes when you're ready. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your continued generosity for this class, this gathering. My prayer for you and all beings is that this will be a gentle, powerful, loving, learning week. May you know you are never alone. May you know that peacefulness, true happiness, if you will, is always present within your being. It's always been there and always will be. So have a good rest of the trip this week.
Thank you, Jerry, and everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jerry, and everyone.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, everyone.
Peace and blessings, everyone.
Yes.
Thank you, everybody. Have a good week. Bye.
It's with us, Jim.
Aloha, my friends.
Aloha.